Hello and welcome to the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McCombs, who is your co-host. The name of this week's episode is Why Can't We Just Do the Right Thing? You know, just do the right thing. All right. And I was always told that if you do the right thing, you will see change. Just a matter of being persistent. And I wouldn't say patient, but just be diligent and relentless. You'll see some change. But can you tell me that the same thing about the vote and the good people of Tulsa, Oklahoma? Also, what about the shootout in Florida between the police and a 12-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl? Were they white or black? Because the police were trying not to shoot them. They were definitely after the police, but the police were not trying to shoot them. So I'm aching to find out, you know, this is just me now. I want to know whether they were white or black. I really do. And what about the continued lies about the presidential election that Trump keeps pushing and his cronies keep pushing? You know, it gotten to the point now where they're saying, well, Biden should just vacate the White House and let Trump move back in. So they see this happening sometime this summer. Then on top of all of this, we have QAnon bearing down in their insane beliefs. They're bearing down on the belief that, you know, you got a cabal and all this kind of stuff. Y'all guys know what I'm talking about. So only thing I can say is, my, and what to do, and what to do. That's all I can say, what to do. All right. So let me turn it over to Michelle, and let's get on with the show. All right, Michelle.
Thank you, Walter, and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Thank you to our live audience guests for joining us. Please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking on the share button at the bottom. Today's Friday Live is sponsored by Beauty Blends by Ami, Soap and Love, and Michelle Sweeney here. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. This, our regular weekly panel, is joining us. Today we have Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, retired New York sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof's Catering. We have Gregory Coleman out of North Carolina, COO of Illumination Media and Technology and Engineer at The Walt Weekly. We have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps, Combat Veteran, Senior Consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and Professional Consultant. Our next panel is Honorable Gene Anthony Edwards, Male District Leader, 79th District, out of the Bronx, New York.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it also. And I just want to just say, you know, the panel. Yeah, you know, we call them, I nicknamed them now, the Big Four.
The Big Four.
So the Big Four is here. Yeah, right. The Big Four. All right. And so they're going to be dealing with these questions. And first off, I just want to start by, you know, these states, especially Texas, that are trying to basically nullify the minority vote. So, you know, that's voter suppression 1.0, for lack of a better term. They're really pushing to suppress the black and brown vote of this country. They want to make it so it doesn't even count.
Right.
So I want to know what they think about this, especially with Texas.
The it shouldn't be shocking the way that it is happening. It's been something that has been every time we do a commemoration. Obviously, we got Tulsa. We commemorate the passing of the Civil Rights Act, passing of the Voter Rights Act. We commemorate the number of years of slavery. But at every single turn, there are the core of America that wants to be superior. We have a country that was categorized as founded. But how do you find something where it was already inhabited? Built by a people who was taken from its, you know, from its homeland, who now you, you know, wish not to to recognize for it, you know, for their contribution. And so at every single turn, you know, and more succinctly, ever since the and I know Gene will have more numbers, statistics, but ever since Reconstruction, I mean, by the time after the Civil War, we had about 1,500 black elected officials across the country. That quickly dissipated by the time the turn of the century came around. And then you had Jim Crow laws that at every time they were trying to suppress our votes, even though the you know, 13th and 14th Amendments were, you know, were put in place. Well, 14th Amendment were put in place in order to be able to give us the right to vote. And it took all the way to 1960. The Voter Rights Act to be passed. The Voter Rights Act to be passed in order for that to happen. So it's nothing new. It's the same game, just a different year.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a little bit more prolific than it was in the past? It's more. I was thinking about it, and I said to myself, "Well, in the past, and I've been out here a long time. I'm not that old. I'm retired, right? But I'm not that old. But don't you think it was just more pressed down into the subconscious, and now it's conscious. These people that have come out of the woodwork, these Trump supporters and these Karens and all this kind of stuff.
It's a wave.
It's just a more conscious.
It's a wave. If it's a wave, if you think about it, we had a civil war for a reason, not because it was a way of life. It was a way of life that people felt was being jeopardized. And so you had entire states that wanted to secede, build their own government. Richmond, Virginia, the state that I live in, becomes the capital of the Confederacy. Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, you know, becoming, you know, the president and the general and creating their own their own laws and creating their own. They lost. And then you get the Great Depression. Then you get Jim Crow. Then you get the Ku Klux Klan. And so it comes in waves. And January 6th was a remnant of that wave, of that same feeling that's been suppressed by a I don't necessarily consider a majority of the country, but a good large portion of this country that still shares the same feelings of their great grandfathers or great great grandfathers, if you will.
I mean, QAnon, what they preach, you got 1/3 of Republicans that believe in what QAnon is saying. And that is amazing to me. Because that's not reality. What they're saying is not realistic. It's not logical. I mean, it's just not fact. But you got 1/3 of Republicans that believe in what QAnon is saying.
I still think there's a good portion of this nation, and the last 5-6 years has shown there's a good portion of this nation that will continue to profit and benefit by chaos. Unknowing, ignorant majority of the people of this country in. And when I say unknowing and ignorant, I don't mean people that are just intellectually disabled. I mean unknowing and ignorant of what certain things that are going on, the mechanisms that are behind the coronavirus upheaval, the political upheaval, governmental upheaval, the financial markets. And as long as they keep us spinning, fighting with each other over nonsense, defending nonsense, they'll still be able to do what they do and gain financially, and we'll still be fighting over the same nonsense. Stupidity, like you said, you know, this stuff is illogical, you know, but we have to defend against QAnon conspiracy theories. Like Ernest was saying, during the Civil War, They lost. They were the losers. They were mutinous. But ultimately, they were still rewarded. They weren't treated like losers. They weren't treated like people that turned against their government. They were rewarded. They were given a land that the former slaves were promised. So they benefited from it. So if that's your template, if you want to start another, you want to get back what you say was taken from you, you do it again. So there's no real reason for them to show anything other than mutinous behavior, because they were rewarded for it after the Civil War. And I think there's a faction out there that think they're going to be rewarded for it again. So that's one of the things that we're up against.
So do you think that these people want to relitigate the Civil War? They want to fight it again?
Not in the same terms, but yeah, I think the people that are pulling the strings would like to see the nation at each other's throats again. Yeah. But then you have the rah-rah, because you got to think, most of the people that were fighting, I mean, we were pawns. There were pawns on both sides. The people that were dying and, you know, the people that were being destroyed, whose lives were being destroyed during the Civil War, those weren't the people that were calling the shots. They weren't the people that were pulling the strings. And you know, they were the ones that were, you know, rah-rah and waving the Confederate flag, the same people that were waving the Union flag. I mean, on both sides, you know, they're pawns, just like any other war. It's the pawns that do the fighting. But the people that are calling the shots and doing the controlling, you know, they gained. And okay. I think, yeah, they would love to see that happen again. You look at all the CEOs and financial heads that benefited during the coronavirus. Everybody else got financial situation got worse, but they see more of a windfall.
Yeah, I know the portfolios are up, man. I can't mm-hmm. complain a little bit, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So I
say that to say I think we got to get wise at the way, you know, we act during all this.
That's true. I want to hear from Gene.
Yeah, which one, the Texas laws or QAnon? Which one you want to hear about, Texas laws or QAnon?
I want to hear about Texas law, then QAnon.
All right, the Texas law, I think that's the Stacey Abrams effect. You saw what, you know, how they were able to turn a red state like Georgia and make it blue. And I think this is just all about trying to sustain white supremacy. That's all that is. You know, we've seen this before. And I saw one of your questions was can the federal government do anything? Not when it comes to voting. It's all about states' rights. You know, the federal government can only do what so much, but, you know, states' rights is something that the Klan fought for. You know, not sure whether it was Ernest, Greg, or Big Swing that mentioned the Civil War, but after the Confederates lost, they made sure that they were going to be able to maintain their white supremacy in their respective states by pushing for states' rights. As far as the QAnon, I really don't even pay attention to them, man. Like, I don't. Like, that's not my fight. That's their fight. You know, even with the insurrection on January 6th, that was, you know, white supremacists and alt-right and QAnon conspiracists. You saw the big people holding the big signs with the letter Q, you know, going after their own government. That's their problem. That's not my problem. To me, it's of no moment, so I really can't comment on it. And that's all. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Gene. Chris?
Well, I like to piggyback on Gene. QAnon is not our fight and all of that. It's illogical, just like Jim Crow. All of these, you can't make sense out of hatred and bigotry and racism. They're steeped in stupid, but they have nothing. They can't think outside the box. They've been outsmarted. Like I said, Stacey Abrams and people like her did the work. They went to the people and they presented something to the people that they can run with. these people don't have anything to present but this foolishness. And I keep saying racism is an existential threat to everyone in this country, not just black and brown people. It is a threat to all of us. It's a threat to the nation. And, you know, I'm not surprised by anything that they do in Texas. We shouldn't be surprised. They show who they are time and time again. And their voice is loud right now. They got the media. They got the bullhorn. But, you know, it didn't work. It didn't keep people from the polls. They came out anyway. They were doing this stuff for the election. People still came out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the same strategy that we used during the presidential election, it's the same strategy we're going to use going forward, right? But there are some structural changes, right? Aren't there some changes, like Sunday voting, early voting, and absentee voting, and things of that nature? Aren't there some structural changes that we will have to adapt to?
Yeah. Yes, but we could adapt, and we'll just go around it, and we'll do what we need to do. They tried to implement all kinds of foolishness during this election, and it didn't work. And if people are diligent, we get out there, we spread the word, and we share what they're doing with everybody to let them know that this is happening. They're still going to go out, and they're still going to do what they got to do.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next question that I have. And that has to do with Michael Flynn. Y'all guys here, I don't know whether y'all guys got a chance to hear him the other day when he alluded that, you know, a coup was good. All right. And so that leads me to question, especially the guys, the veterans here, we got three, but whether that is an offense that can be court-martialed. Because he is a general. And even though retired, but he's still a general.
Let's add in, Walt, they have this president thinking, the former president thinking that he's going to be reinstated in August alongside this foolishness that Flynn just said.
Yeah. But can he be court-martialed? I'm asking whether Flynn can be court-martialed. I'll ask Gene.
He's not on active duty anymore, is he?
No, he's not.
No.
Yeah.
Ernest, I mean. Yeah.
He's a civilian.
Outside of him doing something, I want to say that there's a possibility that you could lose your retirement potentially, like if you do like a crime of moral turpitude. I don't think that this it raises to that particular level. With the level of protection. So the short answer is no, he's not going to be court-martialed for this. It is one of those things that compromises the integrity of what the military is and the positions that we're supposed to have, especially along the lines of being apolitical. Although that as a civilian, you are able to express your own particular political viewpoints and do things in a certain manner. But as a general officer, there are certain responsibilities that are and levels of expectation out of your decorum and your behaviors that are expected. And he is definitely not meeting those. So his rhetoric is dangerous, foolish, and I do believe that there should be something done about willfully misleading the public. But I don't think that anything monetarily wise that he'll be touched. I mean, he's already been to jail and been out of jail, so he's already been pardoned.
Yeah, Jane. Okay, let me just extend my apologies because this is a live and a virtual get together of the team, so we're dispersed all over the East Coast. So we do have a lot of technical difficulties that we have to overcome. So I apologize for that.
Gene just came back in.
Yeah, I see Gene is coming back in now. Okay. Yeah, Gene, did you get the question with Michael Flynn?
Oh, yeah, he's a Trump loyalist. Like, you know, what else would you expect him to say? I mean, if I lie for you to the feds and I go to prison and then you get me out and get my entire record expunged, you're my best friend for life. How can you know? I mean, I'm not surprised by it. As far as him being reinstated in August, no, that's not going to happen. Like we said, we had a fair and democratic election. The last stand was the insurrection on January 6th, which that will never happen again. And as far as Trump being reinstated, I don't even think that even made the news. I mean, if it did, I sure missed it.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it. I don't know where I saw it at, but I did see it in my research. He will be reinstated sometime. If I may be mistaken, don't hold me to this date, sometime in July. And Joe Biden should just vacate the White House.
I don't think the purpose of them saying this is to actually see him back in the office. It's just to create tension between the factions, different factions here. And they want civil war. So the angrier you get people and the more of this foolishness that they keep spewing, it pushes them closer to what Flynn actually said. That can be a reality. They're going to try this again.
All right, yeah, so what are you saying? They're going to attempt to start another civil war?
Yes, I believe they will. I believe the insurrection was the first step. They are not going to stop here. And the reason why they won't stop, because nothing was done to them. Listen, there's no secret that the Republicans don't want to investigate it because many of them were involved in it.
Yeah.
They were involved in that. You couldn't pull that off the way it went down without people
inside help
helping them. Yeah, they had help with that. Mm-hmm. And that was just a teaser. Yep. They were helped by those politicians that, first of all, that were out there. Many of them weren't out there, but they showed these people the ins and outs of that mm-hmm. building. They walked them through there. They know about it. They had rallies
mm-hmm. in their towns
that were led by some of these Congress people. They mm-hmm. are involved in that, and it's going to happen again. You don't make anybody pay a price for it, it will repeat itself.
Yeah. No consequences.
Well, I did. There was a night and day clip of Mitch McConnell, you know, a day or so after the insurrection, saying these people will be held accountable. And now he flip flopped, you know, 180 degrees, and saying, "Oh no, we don't need that. It's just a bit of political witch hunt, politicization or whatever."
That's probably because there shouldn't be any type of commission to investigate that. He's finding out that the people he's sitting next to were involved in it.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Yes. So, when Trump got elected, you know, I said to myself, I said, okay, he's not my president. I was very upset. I mean, you could compare me to how they felt when President Biden got elected. All right. But I said to myself, you know, as a rational thinker, you know, the guy got 4 years. Let him do his four, which is the most miserable 4 years I've ever seen, because every day the dang gone guy was on the phone, on the news. Every day. Yeah. He was doing every day. There was not a day that would pass that he wasn't tweeting or talking nonsense.
I mean, he was obnoxious before he won. What did you expect? I just knew he would get worse.
Time takes care of everything, right? So, you know, ever changing. And I thought I could just get by, but, you know. But why can't some Republicans look at the same thing and say, okay, let me turn my attention to 2024 and we're going to try to get them out at that time. Why do you got to try to do it prior to, you know, 2024? That's what I don't understand.
This is a part of the game. Mitch McConnell, you know, doing a 180-degree turn is nothing new. Anything time that the Republican Party will do something, it's overlooked or accepted. So right. Either one, right? Whenever it's a Democrat, then it's, you know, unless it's favorable for him. Because it's favorable to say something that's in alignment in the beginning. But all of it just becomes very much disingenuous. And so Mitch McConnell on day one, when President Obama was in office, said that they're going to do everything they can do to get him out of office, to make him a one-term president. Right. That was his goal back in 2008.
Right.
Well, 2007 officially. I mean, 2008 officially.
Yep.
And then 2009 once he was sworn in. And so the same thing here now. And when it comes down to the insurrection, I mean, honestly, what I think that should happen more, there should be more push and call from the people. Because although we may say that we want them out, how many letters have really have gone to Congress to request for them to be removed? How many times have we flooded because we flood the emails of CNN and MSNBC and any other news outlet on things that we're up in arms about, but we're not really up in arms about them, you know, being removed from office. There should be consequences. I mean, like Chris said, if you don't do anything, nothing's going to happen and nothing's going to change in the behaviors. They're almost like kids and teenagers. If you let me get away with this, imagine when I'm going to be able to pull off.
That's right.
Yeah, imagine when I'm going to be able to pull off.
And Ernest, let's not forget, Mitch McConnell had a reason to say what he said in the beginning because his wife was still employed with Trump.
Right.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? He was taking cover for himself there and his wife. So we got to look deep. We got to look real past some of the rhetoric and some of the things that they say and watch their actions. Mm-hmm. His wife was one of the last people to leave. She stayed there almost the whole time. So, right. Of course, he had to make that statement. She was still there.
Mm.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, you know what?
What I think is that, you know, everybody has a price. You know, I don't care what you say. I learned this a long time ago. Everybody has a price. Okay. So I think that, you know, with Mitch McConnell and all the rest of them, they got a big war chest of money that Trump has raised and is still raising that's sitting out there. And, you know, to go a little bit further, you know, we can write letters, but I mean, as you say, you know, all politics is local, right? I mean, what would those letters do? How would they? So I think it's money. I just think it's money and power at the end of the day that is keeping things the way they are. That's why they can just ignore what they said originally and withdraw that statement and just lie and say something else. I don't think
you're right. All politics is local, Walter. You said it right, because that came from Tip O'Neill, who was a former Speaker of the House. And Mitch McConnell, don't forget about what happened last year on Election Day. They closed the polling sites in predominantly black districts, and they chained the doors. The police chained the doors, okay? And there was never a thorough investigation done, because after the Breonna Taylor killing, we found out that the state's attorney general for Kentucky is his son-in-law. Or in his, the black guy is married to his daughter or his niece or something like that. So now we know why there was never any investigation done, because like Walter said, all politics are local. I'll have the police close the polling sites so the black people can't vote me out, and then the state won't investigate me because the attorney general for the state is my nephew, although he's black. So don't forget about that. Also about Trump. Yeah, also about Trump and this, because I thought this was like the most blasphemous thing that could ever be done in modern day politics. Like you could actually have the police close the polling site and chain the door and tell people to go someplace else. Where they can go someplace else because you got to vote at that particular polling site. I know
right,
that much.
Right.
So people would, thousands were disenfranchised, and Mitch McConnell did that, all right, in Kentucky. As far as Trump and being reinstated, don't forget, you got Tish James, the attorney general for the state of New York, and you have Cyrus Vance, who's the district attorney for Manhattan. They're investigating Trump, and they're ready to come forward with. Matter of fact, they sent a letter to his attorneys last week saying that this is no longer a civil investigation, but is now a criminal investigation. So that's still on the table. So a lot of this moving pieces that you see, don't fall for it. Don't fall for it.
Mm-hmm.
Trump may be going to jail soon, or at the very least getting indicted and going to trial.
I hope so. This is a long time coming.
I thought he was there, they were close. It just got farther and farther away.
I've been waiting for years.
That's the purpose of them putting those rumors out there and making those statements, because they're looking for sympathy from the people for him. And if they come to put cuffs on Trump, these people will turn the country upside down and fight for him. That's what he's doing. He's trying to keep himself in the media spotlight.
Right.
In the mix, because he's trying to protect himself. He doesn't want the seat back. Doesn't care about that. He's just trying to insulate himself.
Yeah, he just doesn't want to go to jail.
Protection. Executive protection.
That's it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. He knows he has a lot of stupid people that are going to be behind him if something happens to him. So
that's why he's pushing that lie. He's going to push that lie that, you know, the election was rigged. He's going to push that lie until they lock him up and then throw away the key.
Exactly. It's not about
that's the only thing that's protecting
actually
him.
Losing to Biden. He knows he lost. He's using this as a shield to protect him in these cases, because he knows they got the goods on him.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he knows there's a lot of stupid people that follow him, so... You know, I mean, the insurrection was proof of what is, you know, the beginning of what can happen. It's just going to get worse. You know, that's that privilege. Shame. Privilege.
All
right,
so
now, if that was a black mob, they wouldn't even gotten that far.
Well, I mean, one of the Republicans said so.
Yeah.
If that was Antifa or Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, they would have been
scared. Yeah, but since he saw his brothers, he figured, these are patriots, so I'm not afraid.
Just to piggyback off of what I said earlier in the program, when I talked about after the Confederates lost, they fought for states' rights, and this, you know, this was in regards to the voting laws, well, the unfair voting laws in Texas. The reason why they fought for state rights is so people like Mitch McConnell could do the things, like I said, have the local police close and chain the doors and know that there will not be a federal investigation, because that was the state of Kentucky that conducted that. And if the state attorney general for the state of Kentucky doesn't want to investigate it, then the Justice Department needs to mind their business. I don't care how much of a crusader Merrick Garland is. Those state rights, they know how to play that game. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, thank you, Gene. Thank you. Yeah, I heard a lot about states' rights, and they're powerful. Things can be pushed down from the federal government. All right, the only thing the only ammunition that the Fed has is, you know, the purse string. They can play with the purse strings in terms of what they allocate to the state. That's all the power that they have. If I'm wrong, Gene, you correct me.
Which is why, just like we said a couple of weeks ago, it comes down to, we have to be smart and start taking them out locally. We have to force the fight locally, because that's the only way we empower them to be able to do what they do, because we ignore those local elections.
That's true. That's true. We did a show on that. We did a full show on all politics is local.
Yeah,
you know, you got to vote local.
Yeah, but even to what I was saying earlier about the letters. I mean, granted, yes, to Gene's point, Greg's point, all politics is local. I definitely know that.
Thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Gene.
Yeah, Ernest.
Ernest, I'm sorry. Hey.
Yeah, you good? Okay. So we can start pushing the pressure up. So we start with, I don't care, whatever, you know, city council or like male district leaders, female district leader, whoever district leaders, you start with your community, you push that up to the next level, you push it up to the next level, you push it up to the next level, you push it up to the next level, and you get everybody involved. The part of the issue is that we don't have enough buy-in. Like, we have enough people that might agree to something, but they're not really bought in. Like, and everybody's not willing to do the hard work and or the hard work that it takes in order to being able to do what's necessary to being able to make a difference. Not necessarily just making a change, but making a difference within their communities. And if we're voting local, then those local individuals as a body, see, an individual person is all by themselves, but as a body, city council as a body, they're powerful. I mean, I know in Richmond, like the budget is like a billion dollars, right? That's how much money they're overseeing, just in the city, just in that city of 200,000 people, over right. 220,000 yeah. people. So you make them forced their hand to force the General Assembly. You made the General Assembly force their hand to move up to the governors of the state, and you make them force the hands of Congress and Senate, and then that's how you get things done. But we're not putting enough pressure. So now we can't just start at the top. We can't just leave it up to the bottom. We got to make sure we get everybody involved.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Greg, do you have anything you want to say on this topic before I move on?
Hold on. With where Ernest is coming from. I mean, when I said that we must, you know, fight locally, I don't mean to ignore, you know, what goes on top. When we start fighting locally, we have to finish that fight all the way up the chain. I mean, it's a complete, we just can't focus on one part of it. We have to get the total picture. We got to be strategic and take it all the way to the top. But we start locally, engage our politicians locally, and work that all the way up the chain. But we got to work it. Like Ernest said, we need to buy in.
Okay, Gene?
Yeah, Walter, but here's the thing. I just gave you the scenario that actually happened last year in 2020, right? 20 years into the 21st century, and they're still using the same tactics that they use in the 50s and the 60s and the 40s that Dr. King fought for. We need to bring in the National Guard, whoever the we is in those districts in Kentucky, to ensure that this doesn't happen again. Like, that's when the feds can step in, where the president can order the National Guard to monitor polling sites in black districts or predominantly black districts, to make sure that they're not disenfranchised, because trust me, black folks was ready to vote Mitch McConnell out, but they couldn't. Once they chained the doors, that was it. That's it. Your vote doesn't count. You don't get the vote. So all that vote stuff is cool.
Gene is right. If it ain't broke, they're not going to change their tactics. You haven't made them change their tactics. That's why Mitch McConnell had no problem letting Trump be the loudest person in the room, because he was doing his own dirt and nobody was paying attention to it. He got away with it.
No, that is true. But the thing is, what Gene just said would be true. But the problem is, even utilizing the same 2020 election, is that Trump was president. So you weren't going to have the president call in the National Guard to being able to protect black communities. It would only work if you had a president that cared about what was actually happening. So, I mean, so we're all, I mean, everybody, I mean, Gene Wright, Chris Wright, you're right. But that would only work for like the 2024 election, where you could actually have Biden call in the National Guard to protect the polling sites in those areas to ensure that the election goes the way that it should do. I mean, as long as fair, a fair and free election, that, you know, it happens that way. So whatever the results are, that's what the results are.
Right. No, I'm not disputing that at all. I got a question though. We expect Mitch McConnell to do something different he's been doing the same thing for several presidents, and he's been getting away with it. Why would he change?
My question is, can the president activate the National Guard without the governor's consent in that state?
No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it was done. Yes and no. It was done with George Wallace. That was done.
No.
I'm not sure about that.
No. It's a yes and no. It all depends on what the situation is. If it's a state issue, then the president would not have. There's no ground for him to actually activate the National Guard. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the president only has the most latitude is with the Marine Corps, and can send us on exercises and things of that nature, but that's out of the state. That's not domestically. So he there's a limitation to what the president is able to do without provocation.
Hmm. Yeah, okay, but this is my question to you. I do remember vaguely when I think it was the University of Alabama, whatever, the first black student that tried to enter, and they were blocked by George Wallace. Okay, and the federal government intervened and escorted the girl into the building. All right. Now, is that because it was enforcement of a federal law, which would supersede the state in that particular situation?
Department of Education. Mm-hmm. Yes, Department of Education is federal.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that would be the exception. If it's a federal law that's being implemented and the states tries to block that.
Yes, but again, it's a by case situation, case by case situation, in order to being able to make that type of determination to get that type of support.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's talk about Trump a little bit more. Okay. Now,
you really love Trump, don't you?
Walter, do we really have to?
I don't like Trump, but I can't avoid the guy. I mean, the guy's, he's just like a damn ghost or something,
I wish he would be a ghost.
Looking down here, he pops up over there, with Trump and this all this money that he's able to raise, all this support that he has, one-third of the Republicans. All right. I mean, what are you going to do with, what can you do with a guy like that? What do we do? We just let it ride out
I have to ignore him.
Yeah. I can't ignore him. Go ahead.
He has to be ignored. He is playing us. He is using the media. He is using every bit of this to his strength. Mm-hmm. And they have to tune him out.
And keeping him relevant, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. The money, he ain't turning that money over either.
It's not playing to his strength. He misses the attention. He's still blocked on Twitter and other social media outlets. So he can't get his message out whenever he wants to. So he's just doing this for attention, and right. He misses the attention. As somebody that was once the president of a fraternity, Ernest, I was once the worshipful master of my lodge. You know, everybody surrounds the worshipful master or the president of the lodge. Everybody's always calling you. Everybody fixes your plate. Gives you the biggest piece of chicken to get to eat first. Everybody pretty much kisses your ass. But guess right. what? When you step down and you become the past president, or as we say in masonry, a past master, and I'm no longer the worshipful master, nobody right. calls you. You're lucky right. people but say, hey, how you doing, brother? Nobody calls
the difference,
you.
Like, all, the difference
all
between...
All the attention goes away. Now, can you imagine that happening to me? Imagine being the president of the United States. You have access to phone calls to world leaders and all it, like you said, Walter, he's on television every day on something he either did wrong or did right. And then all of a sudden, just like that, everything is taken away. That little crybaby misses the attention.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to be prosecuted. That is the big, that's the elephant in the room, though.
Well, honestly, I mean, Chris, to your point, I think he was always under investigation for, I mean, they were building their cases against him. And also the interest to being able to go after him. Because I believe
he had the presidency protecting him then. He doesn't right. have that now. So now he right. has to use the media. He has to use all of these tactics because he doesn't you. Have that protection anymore.
Absolutely.
All right. Does anybody know whether the grand jury, I think under Letitia James, has it been seated yet?
I haven't heard.
I haven't heard anything. No.
Okay. All right.
I did hear today.
No. Yeah, the last thing I heard was that, you know, she had sent a letter to Trump's lawyers saying that it's no longer a civil investigation, it's now a criminal investigation. The last thing that I saw on the news was that Tish James, the attorney general for the state of New York, sent a letter to Trump's attorneys saying that this is no longer a civil investigation, but it is now a criminal investigation. So there's no grand jury that's been composed because, you know, they're still investigating the criminality behind Donald J. Trump.
Okay, so
I did see on the news, though, Walt, that his yeah. condos are rock bottom. Everybody's home, the property values are shooting through the roof. But his are mm-hmm. dropping like a stone in the ocean, like a boulder. People are scooping them up for rock bottom prices.
Yeah, because he's got his name on it. That's what it is. You got to change his brand. That's what you do in situations like that. Change the brand name. But anyway, I want to switch over to Tulsa, guys. You know, I mean. That it was so devastating. But did y'all guys get a chance to watch it? The specials that they had on.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was something. I mean, they did do in depth. I have to commend yeah. them for doing it. I have to commend President Biden for going to Greenwood. That was heartfelt on my side, as far as, you know, from my point of view. Something that should have been done long, long ago, but they buried it. And you see how successfully, you know, white people can bury things. And you can imagine what else has not yet to be uncovered. So, yeah, right. I'm turning my attention to Greenwood, to the Tulsa massacre. And we talked about this last week. I think we did talk about it in depth, but I just wanted to stick it on this week's program so that, you know, we could
update.
Imagine if it could happen again. Is it possible something like this can happen now?
It it's almost possible. Happened in Washington, D.C.
Right. I was going
to
say.
I mean, one, it happened to the Capitol specifically. Mm-hmm. But, one, I don't think them people really want to go to the Southeast, D.C. that's the tree they definitely don't want to bark up. But, but it did happen. It just didn't, again, like it wasn't 300, you know, it wasn't, you know, a whole black community that I mean, because gentrification has destroyed black communities for the last 65, 70 years, you know, with, and I mean, eminent domain, I mean, going back to the 1900s. I mean, there's a number of tragedies and stories that have taken place you know, from the Rosewoods to the Greenwoods and Tulsa, you know, et cetera. But could it happen again? It did. And I think Chris had already alluded to the fact that,
yeah,
you know,
move.
We haven't done anything about it. I mean, we haven't done much when it came down to Tulsa to begin with, other than the fact that 70 something years later, we're recognizing it. 80 years later, we're, you know, recognizing it the way that we are. The government's recognizing it the way that it has. So would it be 80 years before we do something about this? Well, in 80 years, you're going to have a lot more opportunities for massacres to occur,
right,
if we don't do anything about what just happened 6 months ago.
Well, almost when we have that Juneteenth show, we're going to actually have somebody on that experienced it in Philadelphia when they bombed Philadelphia. It did happen again.
Oh, yeah.
Right, that was 85, right? Okay.
1985.
I'm looking forward to next week's Juneteenth.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bring it up now, but thanks for the lead in to that, Chris. Yeah, and yeah, next week, Friday. All right. But, you know, with Tulsa, they had mentioned that there were 35 deaths. Then they put something in the newspaper that two whites died. Now we're up to 300, and they're still digging. You know, I'm looking for mass graves.
And well, they ain't gonna find them because they built that highway.
What
there.
Type of remediation do you think the people in that were involved in Tulsa, that were devastated by Tulsa, the massacre rather? What do you think that they should get?
You mean the reparations?
I don't want to use reparations right now.
Well, they already turned them down for something.
You know, adults. You know, American descendants of slaves.
Mm.
No, I mean,
well, they gave reparations to in Florida,
the Japanese,
for Rosewood.
Yeah, but you also gave it to the Japanese, mm-hmm, for the, you know, you gave it to the to Jews for the camps in Germany.
Right.
You know, so there are reparations. You know, granted, has over the years has gained a negative connotation. As it pertains specifically to slavery, or moreover, when in reference to anybody of color, namely Black and African American of African American descent,
right?
But Tulsa and any other community that was disenfranchised to that extent, reparations is an appropriate term. Now, and what the conditions are as into what that payment is that subjective. That's your questions on what should it be? I mean, I don't know how do you repair, you know, again, the lack of generational wealth that was taken away. How do you repair somebody whose heart was broken and they drank themselves to death because they could no longer provide for their family? You know, when they had they were cobblers or masonries or a doctor or whatever, and they no longer have a house and they're living out of a hut. They had to, you know, I mean, just you can't necessarily put a price tag on that. I mean, and granted, I think that just because we can't name it in this particular show, under the time constraints that we have, I don't think that it should be dissolved of the responsibility of those to give it the thought necessary to being able to weigh the gravity on an entire, you know, community that touches more than just Tulsa. Because again, you know, the not being able to go to college, not being able to have a house, not being able to pay the insurances, even for the death of those who were lost. Thank you.
That's what I was going to say. They didn't even get,
they didn't get insurance.
They didn't pay out those policies.
For right. Because they named it as a riot. That's why.
Yes. Yes. Right. It was so much more involved there.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to say it was so much more involved there.
Like, right.
The insurance companies were in on it. They all got off the hook. They didn't pay
right.
out these
they didn't
people.
Pay out.
It was just so much that they did to these people. And,
yeah.
You know, we're just talking about the deaths, which we should, but everything else that went to it, they totally destroyed everything about them.
Yep, completely. They're not even allowed to buy property. They don't even own the handful of Black-owned businesses that they do have. They do not own the land. They refuse to give those people back the land as well. Real quick, I see Adino is in the house. Dem Dread. That is our special guest.
Excellent. Welcome.
Juneteenth. Welcome. You know, if you want to join in, if you have headsets, you can call in if you like, or you just listen in the background, brother.
I just wanted to point that out with the okay. insurance money that wasn't paid out to them. That's what I wanted to add in. And I don't know. Can you? You can't even repay people. There's no price tag.
Yeah.
You know that you could put on this what they did.
Right.
It's just despicable, and they continue mm-hmm. to do. And that's why I think they're making mm-hmm. all these movies and these documentaries. They're trying to lull us to sleep again.
Right.
And, you know, pretend that they care. They don't give a damn.
Right. And they still haven't, like, their loved ones, they have no idea where they're at. You know, they built that highway, and some of those bodies are probably buried right under that highway. That was intentional.
Right. And that was the point I was making about all the other different places. And that's why right. I said over the last 70 years, because, again, I-95 itself, the mm-hmm. way that it's constructed, goes straight through boroughs from New York. Goes straight through the heart of Baltimore, goes straight through the heart of where Black-owned businesses and dwellings were at in Richmond. For those who have ever driven down this way, when you're driving down 95, you come past Kingsman, you come past Ashland, and then all of a sudden, instead of it going straight, it turns and curves around. You know, instead of going, you know, on a path that would have put it outside of the city, it right, goes directly right. straight through the city, which comes straight past my university, Virginia Union, and a number of other of formerly, you know, Black-owned properties, and then all the way down through North Carolina, et cetera. So, I mean, and like I said, I mean, this is such a heavy topic because. And not that you were against anything, Walter, but the very notion, because reparations has such a negative connotation, we ourselves don't want to have that conversation. Like, we're turned off against it. You know, we think that it's going to call. I mean, I'm not saying that you do it, but I'm just saying, like, in general, like, when you have this conversation, like, people don't want to have it.
Well, like, I mean, I took two positions on that, Ernest, you know, just to clarify. You know,
I won't hold nothing against you. I was just saying, in general, when we have these conversations outside, or with, you know, from the beauty salon to the barbershops to the water hole, whatever have you, you know, it's like, nah, well, we don't need reparations, yo. We just need, you know, we need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and this is what we need to do, or, you know. Or, you know, we've been talking about this thing for, like, again, like, we've been talking about a lot of stuff. I think Chris brought it up. I mean, they using the same taxes. Gene brought it up. They're using the same taxes they used years ago.
Yeah, but I studied this issue. I mean, from the time John Conyers brought it up, you know, to Congress as only a study as to the feasibility of reparations, just the study, right. You know, just right. And they didn't even want to. It didn't even pass. They didn't want to even look at it or even consider it. All right.
Shit, they don't even.
So
want to
I am very familiar with it, and I got I have very strong feelings about reparations. Okay. Initially, I thought, hey, I don't need your money. All right. I don't want no handout from nobody. But no, that's not it. That's not it. Now, I don't really want to go down, deep on this issue, but they owe us money. They owe us money.
Land.
They owe us money. That's
money,
that's
land, education, everything.
All right. I won't get paid for what my ancestors did. And I call it deferred wages. And as I said, I don't want to get into a punitive, but deferred wages. It gave me the wages that my people worked. Because they were working for me.
Walter.
Yeah.
Walter, this is Gene.
Yeah, Gene.
George W. Bush, Bush 43, in his second term as president, they had a surreptitious referendum. And for those that don't know what that means, it was a silent meeting. Nobody knew about the meeting. It was a surreptitious referendum with the Cherokee Nation. And the Cherokee Nation wanted reparations for what happened to them, right?
Right.
And the deal was, we'll give you millions of dollars, but if there's any Cherokee Indian that has one drop of black blood, they have to be excluded from the deal.
Wow.
Right? Now, this really took place in the state of Oklahoma.
Yep.
And they were, you know, doing a lot of tests to see if they could build skyscrapers. Because, you know, like that part of the Midwest, they get a lot of tornadoes and things of that nature. Right. Remember that when Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and them were playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and like they had tornadoes that came through and tore everyone's home up. So they were a little reluctant to build skyscrapers, million-dollar skyscrapers in a area that has tornadoes. But the Cherokee Nation took a chance on it. And they began building hotel casinos and things like that and making Oklahoma City a small metropolis. Shortly after that referendum, that's when they started moving the basketball. They started having basketball games in Oklahoma City. It was the Seattle Supersonics. When Kevin Durant, his first year, they would play certain home games. They would have it in Oklahoma City. That was a test. That was the prototype to see if, you know, they can make money off, you know, as far as the NBA, off of selling tickets and concessions in Oklahoma City. Once they realized that they could do it, they moved the Supersonics from Seattle to Oklahoma City. But all of this was started when the Cherokee Nation was first given reparations. And you know, with the native, with the indigenous, they always build those hotel casinos. We got them all over New York. You know about them. So that's where that got started. So to Walter's argument and to Ernest, you know, if it's ever explained to them, Ernest, indefinitely, like how I explained how reparation helped the Cherokee Nation, if it's explained how reparations can help black, well, foundational black Americans and what we could do with our dollars, if we pool it together, I'm sure they'll go for it. The problem is, it's the ignorance, not ignorance being stupidity, but ignorance in its traditional sense, not knowing. We have to explain, we have to educate them, because they're not going to fight for something that they don't know about because they're in the dark and it's not their fault. With that, I'll digress.
Well, respectfully, past master.
Yes.
Respectfully, past master. I think that would be one of the things that you would be able to shed your light on in order to being able to lead people out of that particular darkness. Because you have such an astute understanding of it. And even for Walter, who has studied it, and many others who have studied the very nature of it, to being able to pull the resources that, I mean, obviously we have enough resources just here on this call amongst ourselves. But I mean, imagine what the reach is with our voice, to being able to execute just the way that you said, to being able to educate individuals on it and be able to create a national movement out of it. I think that you spoke it up. I mean, all I'm just doing is acknowledging, you know, saying when I hear the knowledge. So
absolutely.
Thanks for blessing us, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Okay. We're pushing up against that clock again, folks. And I just want to thank the big four, you know, for all you bring to the table. Yes. And I want to thank Michelle. You know, I'm always going to reach out to Michelle. She brings tremendous value add to our show and our listeners. You know, at the end of the day, it's our listeners. You know, what do they take from the show? All right. So, guys, you stick with us. There's a lot that we're going to be doing. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to push out there, you know, to make our lives better. And that's what this show is all about, making their lives better. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle. And thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody.
Yes. Thank you, Walter. And thank you to our great four weekly panel, Christopher Sweeney, Gregory Coleman, Ernest J. Robinson, and Gene Anthony Edwards. We appreciate you guys. For coming up, we have a correction. Our Juneteenth celebration, well, it's not a celebration. Honoring Juneteenth will be on Friday, June 18th at 6 p.m. We will have our panel along with one special guest. And thank you to our sponsors, Beauty Blends by Soap, Beauty Blends by Ami Soap and Love, Michelle Sweeney Hair. And again, our weekly panel guests, thank you so much. Thank you to our audience for joining and writing in the chat room. We may not get to everyone, but we appreciate and we are reading all your remarks. This broadcast will be rebroadcast Sunday at 3 p.m. and it will be available on all streaming platforms. Thank you all for joining our Friday Live. Follow us at www.thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly. And we are also on all streaming platforms. Have an awesome weekend. Be safe and God bless.
All right. God bless. Thank you.
Y'all have a nice one.